Morning, everybody. Buenos dias and bonjour. On behalf of President Obama and Vice President Biden, it is my honor and privilege to welcome you all to the White House and to the United States, for many of you, for the inaugural meeting of the North American Working Group on Violence Against Indigenous Women and Girls. We are thrilled to have this esteemed group of governmental partners here today, and we are especially grateful for the presence of our friends from Mexico and Canada. My name is Carrie Bettinger-Lopez, and I will be your MC for much of the day. I have the distinct honor of serving as the White House Advisor on Violence Against Women, and in that capacity, I advise Vice President Biden and the White House Council on Women and Girls on issues of sexual and intimate partner violence. I also serve as a liaison to the federal agencies and to the advocacy community. Vice President Biden has asked me to convey his regrets that he cannot join us today due to his travel schedule and to extend his heartfelt support for this historic meeting through a letter, which I will read to you in one moment. The Vice President considers it the cause of his life to stop violence against women, and he has advocated tirelessly for decades on behalf of survivors of domestic violence, dating violence, sexual assault, and stalking. And when then-Senator Biden, back in 1994, passed the Violence Against Women Act, which in the United States we fondly refer to as VAWA, he changed history in the United States and around the world. Despite vigorous opposition from some colleagues in Congress, VAWA passed in 1994 and has been since reauthorized three times, with each version improving protections and funding. VAWA has also served as a model for other countries of what a robust national response to violence against women should look like. Vice President Biden often speaks about his desire to change our national culture, where violence against women is often, all too often, ignored or condoned. He and President Obama are firmly committed to curbing victim blaming and bringing to the center those survivors who have traditionally been placed at the margins. And that brings us to our convening today. Throughout our world, and North America is no exception, Indigenous women and girls, and men and boys, face the enduring legacy of historical trauma and injustice. And this has real consequences bearing on their disproportionate experiences with violence. So that is why when President Obama, Prime Minister Trudeau, and President Peña Nieto met at the North American Leaders Summit in Ottawa this summer to discuss key regional priorities, they announced a trilateral commitment to establish a North American working group on violence against Indigenous women and girls. We've since had several listening sessions with tribal leaders and advocates who have informed today's agenda. Today, representatives from all three of our countries are gathered here for the working group's inaugural meeting. We'll spend the day immersed in a conversation about how to most effectively exchange knowledge, share best practices, and improve cross-border coordination in preventing and responding to violence against Indigenous women and girls. As your programs indicate, and that's these documents right here, this document right here, our conversations today will focus on the following topics as they relate to violence against Indigenous women and girls. First, the criminal justice response, including access to justice, law enforcement coordination, and human trafficking. Second, social services, prevention, and public health responses. Third, data collection and research efforts to improve our evidence base. And fourth, efforts to prioritize the human rights of Indigenous women and girls in international affairs. With that, I am now going to do my best to channel Vice President Biden, which is, as many of you know, an impossible task. And for those who are in the know, I need a pair of aviator sunglasses in order to effectively do that. But since I don't have them, I'll try my best. You have copies of this letter also in front of you. That's this letter right here. Dear friends, I want to congratulate you on today's historic gathering. What you are undertaking is of extreme importance. By creating the North American Working Group on Violence Against Indigenous Women and Girls, you are taking a critical step to save the lives of thousands upon thousands of women and girls. I'm really proud to have partners like Attorney General Loretta Lynch and Secretary of the Interior Sally Jewell to work with, and adding their Canadian and Mexican counterparts at the White House today is an extremely strong signal that we are serious about ending violence against Indigenous women and girls throughout the Americas. We have believed that an initiative like this has been necessary for a long time. When I wrote the Violence Against Women Act in 1994, we were unable to get sufficient funding to support tribal governments' efforts to protect women and girls in Indian country. In 2013, with the third reauthorization of the act, and with the incredible help of some strong partners in the Senate and the House, we were able to add significant protections through the Act's special domestic violence criminal jurisdiction provisions, which recognize the inherent authority of tribes to prosecute anyone who commits domestic violence in Indian country. I drafted the International Violence Against Women Act in 2007, and while the act never passed, President Obama took executive action based on its principles, because we believe that violence against women is not only a domestic problem, but also needs to be addressed through our foreign policy. That's why Ambassador at Large for Global Women's Issues, Catherine Russell, and Ambassador to the United Nations Human Rights Council, Keith Harper, are here with us today. They are personally committed to seeing this executive action made real, because we all know that it is truly a global problem. 1 in 3 women worldwide are physically, sexually, or otherwise abused during their lifetimes, and the rates are even higher for Indigenous women and girls. A recent report from the United States Department of Justice, National Institute of Justice, found that more than 84% of Alaska Native and American Indian women and girls in the United States had experienced some form of violence in their lifetimes. And of those women, 56% experienced sexual violence, 55% experienced physical violence from an intimate partner, and 97% had experienced violence from a perpetrator who was not American Indian or Alaska Native. High rates of violence against Indigenous women and girls also exist in Canada and Mexico and across our shared borders. It is imperative that we engage in robust regional coordination to tackle these epidemic levels of violence. That's why you are all here today. You understand this issue personally, and you are all uniquely capable of addressing it head on. I wish you all a productive meeting, and I look forward to continuing to work together to end domestic violence and sexual assault against Indigenous women and girls, both at home and abroad. Sincerely, Joseph R. Biden, Jr. I'll now shift back to myself. I've read you Vice President Biden's letter, and before I introduce our next distinguished speaker, I want to take a moment to just recognize and thank the many members of the White House and our federal partners who have worked so hard to make this convening possible. I also want to acknowledge our Canadian and Mexican governmental counterparts for your partnership. And as I've told several of you this morning, I feel like we are forever bonded by our experience of planning this meeting. And finally, I want to recognize and thank the Spanish language interpreters who are here from the Mexican embassy today. On their behalves, I ask that we make every effort to speak slowly and articulately throughout the day. It now gives me great pleasure to introduce Valerie Jarrett, the senior advisor to President Obama and chair of the White House Council on Women and Girls. Valerie's impressive biography can be found online, but what I can tell you from personal experience is that Valerie, the person, is even more impressive. Her commitment to advancing rights and opportunities for women and girls and her vision for how to embed that commitment within the federal government and beyond are truly remarkable. Valerie, you have set the bar so high for subsequent administrations' work on violence against Indigenous women and girls and women and girls issues more broadly. And you are an inspiration to so many of us. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Carrie, for that lovely introduction and for your leadership here at the White House. Good morning, everyone. On behalf of President Obama, it is my pleasure to welcome you all to the White House for the inaugural meeting of the North American Working Group on Violence Against Indigenous Women and Girls. And I, too, want to take this opportunity to extend a special thank you to our partners in Mexico and Canada who are with us today. Welcome. I want to acknowledge how historic this convening is. Each country's delegation today is led by a woman. What a spectacular way for us all to start the day. This is actually a really big deal. because we know that when more women have seats at the table, the issues of women and girls are given even greater weight. They become a priority. President Obama has made diversity and inclusion a priority since day one of his administration, and 2 months in, he created the White House Council on Women and Girls, which I am so proud to have chaired since then. Our priority is to ensure that in all of our programs and policies and legislation that we support, we put the interests of women and girls front and center. And of course, we also know that it's essential to have men joining us. So to the few good men who are here today, we welcome you as well. We are delighted to have you participating in the conversation. Our movement must be inclusive in order to have sustainable results. Today, we are witnessing this principle in action. This inaugural meeting represents our commitment to working together as a region for human rights, for health, for safety of a population that has been chronically underrepresented and underserved. President Obama has emphasized that now is not the time to rest on our accomplishments over the last 7+ years or to slow down in any way. He has challenged us all to stay strong and to run through the tape. So I want to emphasize that point. We are committed to leaving the world better than we found it, and we will spend every last remaining day that we have here in service of that. Enabling Indigenous women and girls to thrive and achieve their full potential, well, my goodness, that is so important to us in achieving the goal. Therefore, ending violence against women is key to our strategy. And we're proud of the progress we've made with our partners across the country to champion tribal sovereignty and marshal federal resources at unprecedented levels to prevent and respond to violence against women. Today, I am just thrilled that we're making several new exciting announcements about our commitment, including a brand new resource that tribal leaders and advocates have told us is so sorely needed. We have been listening. We're announcing a new hotline to assist Alaska Native and American Indian survivors of domestic and sexual violence, and we're releasing new clinical care guidelines for Indian Health Services facilities for identifying and responding to intimate partner violence for all patients. Our efforts are informed by two core principles that tribal leaders and advocates have told us go hand in hand. The importance of the trust relationship that the United States government has with tribal governments, empowering the tribes to take charge of violent crimes against women. And second, support for tribes so they can mount a very strong coordinated response to violence, including health resources that we all know are so important for survivors. Perhaps the two clearest examples of our administration's commitment are President Obama's 2010 executive order that establishes the White House Council on Native American Tribes, creating a new national policy to ensure that the federal government engages in a true and lasting and effective government-to-government relationship with federally recognized tribes. And the administration's strong support for the implementation of the 2003 reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act. As Kerry mentioned, Vice President Biden was the original author of the act over 2 decades ago. And among many improvements, the updated law recognizes the inherent authority of tribes to prosecute anyone who commits domestic violence, in Indian country. We know that that was a gap in the law. We have closed that gap. Tribal leaders and advocates have long called for this. We delivered. Our commitment to ending violence against women has been ingrained in our foreign policy as well. We all know the power of that statement of North America, which brings us to the discussion that we're going to have today. We all recognize the alarming high and disproportionate rates of violence against Indigenous women and girls across the continent, and we know it's a concern for countries, for all of our countries' national security. And it's a challenge we must face together. So I thank you again on behalf of the President and his entire administration for joining us here today as we work together to tackle our shared challenges and to chart that very important path forward. I'm pleased to be joined here by my colleague, Ambassador Kathy Russell, who I've had the pleasure of working with since day one of the President's administration in her two very important capacities. She now, as you all know, is the Ambassador at Large for Global Women's Issues. She works day in and day out on these issues that we all care so deeply about. And as the chief architect of the United States' strategy to prevent and to respond to gender-based violence globally, Ambassador Russell works tirelessly to communicate these issues as a key tenet of our foreign policy. She reinforces that a world where more than half of the population is neglected, disenfranchised, violated, and abused is a world that is unsafe for us all, unstable, and less economically productive. She understands that we, when we say here at home, has global implications, and it's true around the globe. And we all know that when women succeed, everyone succeeds. So with that, I apologize for having to leave before you end what I know will be an incredible session. I look forward to hearing about it from everyone on our team here today. And with that, please join me in welcoming Ambassador Russell. Thank you all.
Well, thank you very much, Valerie. And I want to just take a minute to really thank her for her leadership and her vision in setting up the council. I think for all of us, you know, we kind of take it for granted now because it's been there from the beginning. But doing that at the White House really from the very beginning of this administration set a tone that I think has been incredibly important. So I'm very grateful for that. I also would really like to take a minute to recognize the groups that work so tirelessly on behalf of Indigenous women and girls here in the United States. Thanks in large part to their efforts, tribal courts are now able to investigate and prosecute non-Native men who abuse Native women on Native land. And I think that's an incredibly important step. And Valerie and Carrie both referred to it, but I think we should all be very grateful for that incredible persistence on their part. I'm told that several groups are participating in this morning's discussion via live stream, and I'm delighted that they will be a key part of our efforts going forward. And you know, Carrie mentioned the Domestic Violence Against Women Act here in the United States, which I had the pleasure of working on when I worked for Senator Biden years ago. And the advocacy groups were absolutely critical to our work. We never would have made the progress. And that's a message that I deliver to countries all around the world to support their civil society because they're absolutely critical. So in this job, I've traveled to dozens of countries where I've learned about the challenges that women face and also talked about how the U.S. government can support progress on gender equality. These challenges vary by country, certainly, from laws that prevent women from fully participating in the economy to difficult security situations that make it hard for girls to go to school to hostile environments for civil society organizations working on behalf of women. But there's one issue that every single country struggles with, and that's gender-based violence. Throughout their lives, women and girls around the world are vulnerable to various forms of violence. Parents choose infanticide over the possibility of having a daughter. Girls undergo harmful practices like FGM or early enforced marriage. Students face sexual harassment or rape. Girlfriends and wives suffer from domestic violence, and elderly women and widows are sometimes abused, isolated, and cast away from their communities. And unfortunately, the downside of my job is that I've seen all of this firsthand. All these forms of violence add up to one disturbing statistic, which is that one in three women will experience some form of violence in her lifetime. You know, it's a statistic that we say so many times, but when you actually stop and think about it, it truly is a staggering number. But even more disturbing is the fact that for Indigenous women and girls, these numbers are even higher than that. Here in the United States, Indigenous women face the highest rates of physical and sexual assault, higher than any other group in the United States. In Canada, Indigenous women are 7 times more likely to be murdered than non-Indigenous women. In Mexico, these communities are similarly at higher risk for gender-based violence. North America is not alone in this problem. On almost every continent, like the Kekchi living in Guatemala, to the Berbers in Africa, to the Gurung women in Nepal, women and girls in Indigenous communities are more vulnerable and often more susceptible to violence. That abuse is compounded by systems that make it difficult for survivors to access the care they need or the justice that they sorely deserve. This is truly a global problem that deserves and requires global attention. But as neighbors who share both borders and a common set of values, our countries also share responsibility, particularly when it comes to gender-based violence in these communities. When President Obama, Prime Minister Trudeau, and President Peña Nieto met in June for the Leaders Summit, they recognized this challenge and decided and committed to take action. And I would say that that leadership, we've seen it in our country on the part of the Vice President, the President, the Secretary, it makes a difference. Leadership matters in all of these contexts. And so I really applaud all of you for coming from countries and being part of governments that really understand the importance of this. It's really why we're here today, to explore the range of issues that we can address together, from increasing access to justice, social services, and health systems, to tackling human trafficking, to developing services for victims that are sensitive to their needs. It's clear that these issues require a coordinated, comprehensive approach because they're influenced by a number of factors. For example, on the international level, we've heard that access to justice can be hindered when information isn't easily shared between law enforcement communities. At a regional level, an increase in extractive industries can sometimes lead to increases in crime that affect indigenous communities. Both of these issues can lead to upticks in gender-based violence. Clearly, history plays a role as well. In the United States, violence against indigenous communities stains many pages of our history. Understanding that history, understanding the legacy of trauma and tension it has left behind, is an important part of our conversation here today. These are complex issues, but I have no doubt that when our governments come together in partnership with each other and with indigenous communities, we can better prevent and respond to violence against women and girls. We can hold perpetrators accountable, and ultimately, we can advance the rights of women and girls to lead lives free of violence. The foundation for our efforts is really strong. Through the North American Leaders Summit, our countries work together on everything from climate to trade to girls' education. Through the Equal Futures Partnership, our countries have joined more than 30 others working to give women equal opportunity to work, to lead, and to achieve. And through this forum today, we're able to deepen our partnerships, strengthen our alliance, and improve our efforts through this trilateral cooperation. This is a theme I saw in many places and I see every day across the spectrum of issues in foreign policy. Coordination and collaboration may not make great headlines, but they are key to our progress on almost every issue, particularly ones like gender-based violence. And that's really because we have so much to learn from each other. In Mexico, more indigenous girls are staying in school thanks to programs that provide financial support to families. In Canada, the National Inquiry into Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls has been given the resources and support needed to study this issue in depth. And in the United States, the Reauthorized Violence Against Women Act has provided tribal communities with both the authority and the resources they need to address violence in their communities. These initiatives reflect the individual responsibilities our countries have taken on this issue. Today, we're coming together to share that responsibility and take another step forward, this time together. Our meeting makes clear that we recognize the importance of the issue, that it isn't invisible and it will not be ignored, that we're interested in learning from each other's efforts, and that we're committed to working in partnership to combat gender-based violence. The United States is a proud supporter of girls and women, both here at home and abroad. We believe in their potential and their right to fully contribute to their societies. We're invested in their futures, knowing that it's a future we all share. We're grateful to Canada and to Mexico for joining us in that investment, and we look forward to making progress together in partnership with each other and with our Indigenous communities. So thank you all very much for being here. I'm very much looking forward to the conversation today.
Thank you so much, Ambassador Russell, and to Valerie Jarrett for such inspiring and important words. It is now my pleasure to introduce Caitlin Kennell, the Director for North America at the White House National Security Council. Caitlin.
Okay, it does work. Okay, great. Thanks, Carrie, for the intro. Thank you, Ambassador Russell, for taking the time and for those great remarks to lead us off, and to Valerie Jarrett to set the stage for us on the importance that this administration in the United States places on this issue. As the Director for North America at the National Security Council, the North American Leaders Summit was my first big project in this job. And so I'm really pleased and very happy to see how much progress we made in just a couple of really short months to get something this large and this productive together so quickly. So cannot thank you all enough for everything that you've done. The emails at 2:30 in the morning, we really, really appreciate it. And looking forward to the great conversations that we're going to have today. So it's now my pleasure to invite colleagues from Mexico, Canada, and the United States to provide an overview of the experiences in each of their countries that each one has faced in addressing violence against Indigenous women and girls. So we'll start with Mexico, and I'll turn to Nubia Mayorga, the Director General for the National Commission for the Development of Indigenous Peoples in Mexico. Thank you.
Muy buenos días, honorables representantes de Estados Unidos, Canadá y México. Para el gobierno del presidente de México, Enrique Peña Nieto, representa un honor participar al más alto nivel en esta reunión de lanzamiento del Grupo de Trabajo Trinacional para combatir la violencia contra las mujeres y las niñas indígenas. Como resultado de los compromisos alcanzados por los mandatarios de Canadá, Estados Unidos de América y México, en el marco de la octava Cumbre de Líderes de América del Norte, celebrada a finales del mes pasado de junio. Deseo agradecer en nombre del Gobierno de México a las autoridades del Gobierno de Estados Unidos de América por albergar este encuentro y recibirnos en este recinto. Los tres países hemos coincidido y convenido en la importancia de abordar y combatir la violencia que sufren las mujeres y niñas indígenas en América del Norte. Por lo anterior, la labor que realiza este grupo de trabajo trilateral va a permitir llevar a cabo un importante intercambio de experiencias y buenas prácticas que desde los tres países nos encontramos realizando en esta materia. En México, hablar de los derechos de las mujeres indígenas es hablar de retos y desafíos que aún presentan las políticas públicas, pero sin embargo, en los últimos años, particularmente en el gobierno del presidente de México, Enrique Peña Nieto, se ha dado un importante avance. Por primera vez, la Planeación Nacional, el Plan Nacional de Desarrollo 2013-2018, establece una estrategia transversal de perspectiva de género, que se ve reflejada en todos los demás instrumentos de planeación que derivan del mismo, entre los que se encuentran el Programa Especial de los Pueblos Indígenas, en el que se trazan las líneas de política pública para alcanzar la igualdad de género y eliminar la violencia contra las mujeres y niñas indígenas. En base en ello, la Comisión Nacional para el Desarrollo de los Pueblos Indígenas, que en sus siglas es CDI y que en el transcurso de esta presentación lo estaré nombrando como CDI, tiene como objetivo llevar a cabo distintas acciones para promover el desarrollo integral y sustentable de los pueblos indígenas, teniendo como uno de sus principales principios incluir el enfoque de género y la interculturalidad de las acciones. La CDI cuenta con un programa de derechos indígenas, a la vez de realizar un conjunto de acciones transversales para consolidar una política pública que prevenga, que atienda, que responda y contribuya a la erradicación de la violencia contra las mujeres indígenas y a la eliminación de los estereotipos de género que se han generado contra las mismas. En este sentido, la principal herramienta de esta política pública para la igualdad de género e intercultural que hemos impulsado son las casas de la mujer indígena, que son espacios físicos en los cuales un grupo de mujeres indígenas apoyan a otras mujeres indígenas, brindándoles asesoría, orientación y acompañamiento para la atención de la violencia que sufren, así como información sobre sus derechos sexuales y reproductivos, ello a través del modelo participativo de atención a la salud sexual y reproductiva, a la violencia de género en mujeres indígenas. A la fecha contamos con 29 casas de la mujer indígena, que han brindado más de 8,000 asesorías a mujeres en lo que va de esta administración del presidente Enrique Peña Nieto, por lo que el Gobierno de México considera que la experiencia de estas mujeres indígenas va a enriquecer el intercambio de experiencias en el seno de este grupo de trabajo trilateral. Aunado a este trabajo de las casas de la mujer indígena en el programa de derechos indígenas, participan los gobiernos locales en elaboración de diagnósticos sobre la violencia contra las mujeres indígenas y mecanismos de atención diferenciados. Estos diagnósticos permiten conocer las causas y formas de violencia que sufren las mujeres indígenas en lo local y las acciones tendientes a su eliminación. Las organizaciones de la sociedad civil son fundamentales en las acciones que lleva a cabo el Gobierno de la República. Por ello, se otorgan recursos económicos a través de este programa para que estas organizaciones coadyuven en el gobierno en la eliminación de la violencia contra la mujer indígena. Es así que se apoyan acciones de derechos de las mujeres, atención y prevención de la violencia familiar y de género, salud sexual y reproductiva, violencia obstétrica contra las mujeres indígenas, prevención del embarazo en adolescentes indígenas, mismas que se fortalecen con el trabajo que México está realizando en el Foro de Población de las Naciones Unidas, prevención del VIH, fortalecimiento y promoción de la partería tradicional, nuevas masculinidades con enfoque intercultural, así como la promoción de los derechos de las mujeres indígenas con discapacidad. Asimismo, se llevan a cabo importantes acciones para el empoderamiento de las mujeres indígenas para fortalecer su participación en todos los ámbitos de la vida política y pública, con instancias del Poder Judicial y de manera muy amplia con la máxima casa de estudios de nuestro país, la Universidad Nacional Autónoma de México, con quien la CDI organiza el Diplomado de Liderazgo para Mujeres Indígenas, no solo de México, sino del Centro y Sudamérica, conjuntamente con el Foro Indígena y ONU Mujeres, como organismos multilaterales. En el acceso a la justicia de las mujeres indígenas, hemos excarcelado en lo que va de esta administración, por delitos considerados como no graves en la legislación mexicana, a 4,315 personas, de las cuales 374 han sido mujeres indígenas. Para apoyar estas acciones, en el marco del nuevo sistema de justicia penal que hoy existe en México, contamos con un padrón de 198 abogados y abogadas indígenas bilingües y hemos capacitado a 650 intérpretes y de los cuales también son traductores en lenguas indígenas, que coadyuvan a que las mujeres indígenas tengan acceso a la justicia en su lengua. Estas acciones se están llevando a cabo en estrecha colaboración con la Procuraduría General de la República y el Poder Judicial de la Federación, con quien hemos suscrito importantes convenios para que garanticemos el acceso a la justicia de la población indígena en su lengua y considerando la diversidad cultural. La CDI, lo comento, trabaja en forma transversal con las demás dependencias que existen por parte del gobierno, del Ejecutivo, para poder darle y cumplir las metas que están establecidas en el Programa Especial de Trabajo para los Pueblos Indígenas. Para el Gobierno de la República, es fundamental que las niñas indígenas accedan a la educación. Por ello, la CDI cuenta con el Programa de Apoyo a la Educación Indígena, que ha permitido que en lo que va de la administración se apoyen a 140,484 niñas indígenas para que permanezcan en la escuela. Esto es mediante el otorgamiento del hospedaje, la alimentación, que son nuestras casas de los niños y niñas indígenas en México. En estas casas son espacios seguros que constituyen la única oportunidad para acceder a la educación, ya que se encuentran ubicadas cerca de una escuela y evita que niñas y niños caminen largos trayectos que pudiera ser hasta de 3 horas en promedio para que puedan asistir a la escuela, en donde además cuentan con actividades culturales para que conserven su cultura e identidad, así como un equipo de cómputo y que también puedan contar con el internet, además que se realizan otro tipo de actividades formativas extraescolares para que puedan realizar y aprender ellos, ellas, un oficio. Con ello, contribuimos a garantizar que estas niñas concluyan su proceso formativo, en el cual se les apoya para concluir una licenciatura con becas para educación superior. A la fecha, 3,284 jóvenes indígenas han sido apoyadas para que terminen sus estudios profesionales. Estas jóvenes indígenas, la mayoría opta por ingenierías y las demás se ubican en carreras como leyes, administración, educación, desarrollo sustentable, por mencionar algunos de ellas. Asimismo, para contribuir al desarrollo económico de las mujeres indígenas, la CDI cuenta con un programa para el mejoramiento de la producción y la productividad indígena. A la fecha, se han apoyado 350,478 personas, de las cuales 196,000 son mujeres indígenas, lo que representa el 56% de los beneficiarios. Con estos beneficios, las mujeres cuentan con un ingreso que les permite la independencia económica, aunado a que constituye un importante aporte a la economía familiar y particularmente al acceso de mejores oportunidades para sus hijos. Por último, quiero destacar el interés del gobierno del presidente Enrique Peña por fortalecer la cooperación bilateral con Canadá y los Estados Unidos de América en materia de asuntos indígenas. Muestra de lo anterior fue la firma del memorándum de entendimiento en junio pasado con mi homóloga de Canadá, la ministra Caroline Bennett, así como el que vamos a suscribir el día de hoy con la secretaria del Departamento del Interior de Estados Unidos, Sally Joel. En ambos instrumentos, el tema de la prevención y la atención de la violencia contra la población indígena, en particular contra las mujeres y las niñas, se plantea como una cuestión prioritaria para que estemos abordando de manera bilateral y avanzando de forma trilateral en el marco de este grupo de trabajo. El compromiso de México es erradicar la discriminación y la violencia contra la mujer indígena y de manera particular con toda nuestra población de niñas y niños, niñas y mujeres indígenas. Muchas gracias.
Muchísimas gracias. Next, we'll turn to Margaret Boyce, the Director General of the Children and Families Branch of Indigenous and Northern Affairs Canada.
Good morning, bonjour, buenos dias. I want to thank our host, the United States, for organizing today's inaugural meeting and the warm welcome we've received. It's an honor to gather here today with representatives from the United States, Mexico, and Canada for this historic event on the traditional territory of the Piscataway people here in Washington. They are from the Algonquin tribe, and it's interesting that our capital, Ottawa in Canada, is also on traditional Algonquin territory. So it's something, yet another thing we share in common. Je suis fière de représenter le gouvernement du Canada ce matin. I know we don't have French translation, so I'm not going to speak too much French, but I just said that I'm proud to represent Canada here this morning. And I welcome the important discussions that will happen here over the course of the day, excuse me, and how our countries can work together to end violence against Indigenous women and girls. Canada has a long history of multilateralism and respect for international and regional cooperation to advance our shared goals. The federal government welcomes this trilateral working group and shared commitment to increase attention, identify common issues, share best practices, and facilitate coordination. As our Prime Minister, the Right Honorable Justin Trudeau, said on International Women's Day in March of this year, violence against women is a violation of the most basic human rights. It destroys lives, tears families apart, impacts entire communities, and has absolutely no place in our society. At a meeting of the United Nations Commission on the Status of Women, Prime Minister Trudeau also emphasized Canada's commitment to promote women's rights and gender equality, and acknowledge that Canada needs to do more to prevent violence against our Indigenous women and girls. We are committed to a renewed nation-to-nation relationship with Indigenous peoples in our country based on recognition, rights, respect, cooperation, and partnership, and to making real progress on issues like community safety, policing, housing, employment, health, child welfare, and education, along with our Indigenous partners. The issue of violence against Indigenous women and girls is an issue that touches Canada's three distinct Indigenous peoples: First Nations, Inuit in the north, and the Métis Nation. Preventing violence against Indigenous women and girls is a complex challenge, and this is evident through the broad scope of the breakout sessions that we will have today. It requires that underlying social and economic issues that contribute to the vulnerability of Indigenous women and girls are addressed. As you will hear later today from the Minister of Indigenous and Northern Affairs, the Honourable Carolyn Bennett, and the Minister of Justice and Attorney General of Canada, Jody Wilson-Raybould, our government took an important step on the journey of reconciliation with Indigenous people in Canada with the launch of a long-awaited national inquiry into missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls this past year. And thank you for mentioning that, Ambassador Russell. I had the honour to lead the federal government's engagement with Indigenous peoples on designing the inquiry into missing and murdered Indigenous women. During this past winter, we heard firsthand of the devastating effects of violence on the survivors, the families, and the loved ones. In many face-to-face meetings, which both the ministers who are attending here today went to, and an additional minister from Canada, our Status of Women Minister Haidu, we met with more than 2,000 Indigenous people who were affected by violence in a matter of just a few months. We received feedback of about 4,000 responses to an online survey as to how to design the inquiry and what the impacts of the violence were. We met dedicated, strong Indigenous people who want change in our country and who want the violence to stop. They shared their ideas on how the inquiry should be designed and the issues that it should examine. And some of the themes that we're discussing today are exactly the themes that we heard about as we traveled the country this winter. We heard from victims of human trafficking who confirmed that the issue of violence against Indigenous women and girls knows no borders. We heard of the intergenerational effects of abuse caused by colonialism, racism, and sexism that were reflected in past practices such as residential schools. We heard from many Indigenous men and boys who want to be a part of the efforts to end the violence and who want to end the intergenerational traumatic effects of the colonialism and racism and sexism they too have suffered from. We also heard calls to put a spotlight on the issue of child welfare and our policies for dealing with children on reserve so that they can be improved. All of this input informed the design of the independent national inquiry. And this past summer, the ministers who are attending today announced the terms of reference for the inquiry and the commissioners. And as of September 1st, they have begun to set up the inquiry and begun their work. We anticipate that they'll issue interim recommendations in November of next year and December of 2018, final recommendations. And I encourage you all to check out their website and watch for those recommendations because they will apply probably in many ways to all three of our countries. I've talked about the inquiry, but today in our breakout sessions, you'll hear more about other immediate actions that Canada is taking to address some of the underlying causes of violence against Indigenous women and girls. And you'll also hear more about that from our two ministers who will be speaking at the end of the day. I'd like to take a moment just to share a few of the initiatives that are happening in our country in a high-level fashion with you this morning. We have Aboriginal community safety planning, where Indigenous communities receive funding to develop community capacity and strategic responses to safety issues, including the safety needs of Indigenous women and girls. Our government's health department, and we have representatives from Health Canada here today, addresses risk factors linked to family violence on reserve and in the north in our Inuit communities by supporting community-based health promotion and prevention programs. Health Canada also supports access to mental health counseling in the shelters that our department helps fund. We have 41 shelters currently built in Canada, and several more being built over the next couple of years. That counseling provides a coordinated, trauma-informed, and culturally appropriate services for women and children living on reserves and in our Inuit communities. Canada is also insuring matrimonial interests on reserve through our Family Homes and Reserves and Matrimonial Interests Rights Act, which provides on-reserve spouses and common-law partners with options, rights, and protections previously unavailable to them in our law, and also provides avenues for victims seeking protection. Our federal police, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, and we have a representative from our RCMP here with us today, have really updated their reporting policies and practices to ensure better data collection. Without the data and statistics as to what's actually happening to our Indigenous girls and women, we can't know the extent of the issue and how much we need to change that issue. So the data collection is absolutely crucial, and the RCMP is really playing an important role in that for us in Canada. In collaboration with our federal, provincial, and territorial partners and community organizations across Canada, we have a federal victims strategy led by Justice Canada, and we have our justice representatives here with us today as well. It supports the development and delivery of culturally responsive victim services for Indigenous victims and survivors of crime, and specialized services for the families of missing or murdered Indigenous women and girls. With the Victims Fund, more than $6 million per year is allocated to increase services for Indigenous victims and survivors and establish the Family Information Liaison Units, which were announced as part of our national inquiry. There are many more initiatives that we'll talk about with you today and share and learn from all of you about the best practices in your country. Across Canada, with our provincial and territorial governments, they are also taking action to combat violence against Indigenous women and girls. All provinces and territories are agreed to fully participate in the inquiry, making it the first ever truly national inquiry in our country. Other provinces, for example, this year in Ontario, the provincial government announced significant funding over the next 3 years to support Walking Together, a long-term strategy to end violence against Indigenous women. With prevention and its reducing the impacts of violence on youth and families as a key component of that. And in the north, our territories are funding culturally relevant initiatives designed and developed by Indigenous women and for Indigenous women to take action to ending violence against them. To make progress to end violence against Indigenous women and girls, the Government of Canada strongly believes that it's necessary to work in partnership with our three countries and in partnership with our Indigenous organizations and partner groups that exist in all three of our countries. We're looking forward to today's dialogue and how we can continue to work together and build towards our next meeting along with Indigenous partners. Our three countries have taken an important step with today's meeting to join forces to end violence against Indigenous women and girls. Thank you again for hosting this meeting, and I wish you all a productive day. Merci, thank you.
Thank you, Margaret. Finally, I will turn to two colleagues from the United States. First, to Larry Roberts, Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs at the U.S. Department of Interior, and then to Bea Hansen, the Principal Deputy Director of the Office of Violence Against Women at the U.S. Department of Justice. Thanks.
Good morning, Sigoli. My name is Larry Roberts. Mm-hmm. I'm a citizen of the Oneida Nation of Wisconsin and leader of Indian Affairs at the Department of Interior, and it's my honor to be with you all here today. With so much of Indian country either sharing international borders or near international borders, our work is so vitally important together with Canada and Mexico to address this very important topic of eradicating violence against Indigenous women and children. Tragically, Native American women experience violence at extremely high rates. More than 84% of Native American women have experienced some sort of violence in their lifetimes, and the data shows that more than half of the perpetrators are non-Native. So in the United States, we are taking important steps to address domestic violence in Indian Country. Some of the steps during this administration has been in 2010 with legislation, the Tribal Law and Order Act, which basically ensured collaboration among the United States and the 567 federally recognized Indian tribes, as well as recognizing tribal courts' ability to offer longer sentences for these types of crimes. With the passage of VAWA in 2013, tribes now exercise jurisdiction over non-Indian offenders who commit domestic violence in Indian Country, and tribal prosecution orders are given full faith and credit. There's currently five tribes across the country that are exercising this jurisdiction currently: the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Reservation, the Pasquayaki Tribe, Tulalip Tribe, Fort Peck, and Sisseton, Wahpeton, Oate. Jurisdiction is just one piece of the puzzle. We can't begin to make headway with our troubling domestic violence statistics without also addressing the criminal justice system as a whole. Increased budgets have been key to the steps that the administration has taken, but we're still at an estimated $2.2 billion shortfall. Through the good work of folks like Tricia Tingle in the Office of Justice Services, we're working side by side with tribal nations to strengthen tribal courts. We're also working side by side with tribal nations to increase resources within Indian Country to address crime. And so from 2009 to 2011, the department, working hand in hand with Indian Country, demonstrated that violent crime can be dramatically decreased through a targeted approach and community policing techniques. Through this effort, over a 24-month period, we saw a decrease of 35% of violent crime across four reservations. Building off of these results, we also launched a recidivism initiative. We based this program on data which suggests that the vast majority of offenses are not committed by violent criminals, but rather people who have suffered from untreated substance abuse issues, and many of whom lack access to treatment options. And so too often we saw some individuals out there serving effectively life sentences 6 months at a time. And so we launched an initiative to address recidivism on three reservations, and our preliminary data shows that we've seen a reduction in recidivism by double digits. So this recidivism work is also folded into our Tawahe initiative, which focuses on strengthening families. And we know that we need to address the root issues of poverty and other issues to really address this harder issue of eradicating domestic violence in Indian Country. So, for example, with recidivism, if a young girl is shielded by abuse from hands of a community member who has had access to treatment, it's one less likely adult that we're going to see long term in the in our criminal justice system. So the status quo for Indigenous women and children in Indian Country is clearly unacceptable. The United States is taking a serious and comprehensive approach to address this: enhanced tribal jurisdiction, targeted law enforcement resources, and then programs designed to support individuals and families are examples of strategies that give us tremendous hope for the future. We know that our work is not done, and we want to continue to explore solutions to this complex issue. We look forward to learning more from our neighbors in Canada and Mexico about the ways that we can partner together to ensure safer and healthier Indigenous communities. So thank you.
So I'm the other half of the United States delegation. I'm Bea Hansen with the Office on Violence Against Women. Just want to thank our partners from Mexico and Canada for being here with us and taking this trip to be here. It's proving to be an exciting day. Before I dive into some of the specific ways the Department of Justice and the Department of Health and Human Services work with tribes to combat violence against American Indian and Alaska Native women, it's important to emphasize that the foundation of all of our work in Indian Country rests on respect for tribal sovereignty and on mindfulness of the United States government trust responsibility to tribes. These core principles inform all of our efforts, and so we place the utmost importance on regular tribal consultation. We understand that listening to tribal leaders and learning from them is absolutely critical to fostering a positive and productive government-to-government relationship. The Department of Justice has hosted annual tribal consultations on violence against American Indian and Alaska Native women for the past 10 years. The Violence Against Women Reauthorization Act of 2005 added this requirement of annual consultations to enhance our government-to-government relationships. And here's a copy of the report. We have a few of them available from last year's consultation. At each consultation, the Department of Justice, Interior, Health and Human Services receive recommendations from tribal leaders on how we can improve federal support of tribal governments and their efforts to combat violence against women on their tribal lands. These recommendations help us shape and implement federal grant programs and other initiatives to address sexual assault and domestic violence in Indian Country. Beginning in 2010, to expand consultations to a regional, on-the-ground level, the Department of Justice directed that all federal prosecutors' offices with Indian Country within their districts engage in consultation with tribes at least once a year. At the Office on Violence Against Women, we aim to seek input from tribal leaders more frequently than the one the law mandates. For example, we held two tribal leader listening sessions in the lead up to this working group meeting, and we'll be consulting with leaders from more than 220 Alaska Native villages next week at the annual convention of the Alaska Federation of Natives. The Department of Justice has an Office of Tribal Justice, which advises the department on matters pertaining to Native Americans. And at the Office on Violence Against Women, we have a Deputy Director for Tribal Affairs. That's Lorraine Edmo, who's here with us today. She works to ensure that the voices of tribes are heard throughout everything that we do in our office. Lorraine meets regularly with tribal leaders nationwide to gain a better understanding of the needs and challenges that tribes face. She coordinates the implementation of the tribal provisions of the Violence Against Women Act within our office, and she oversees a staff of grant program specialists responsible for administering grants to tribes. The Violence Against Women Act authorizes four grant programs that are specifically designed for tribal communities: the Grants to Tribal Governments Program, the Tribal Sexual Assault Services Program, the Tribal Coalitions Program, and a new Grants to Tribal Governments to Exercise Special Domestic Violence Criminal Jurisdiction. And Larry had mentioned that provision in VAWA 13 a few minutes ago. In fiscal year 2016, the Department of Justice awarded more than $107 million in new grant funding to American Indian and Alaska Native communities. This includes nearly $45 million from the Office on Violence Against Women to fund programs in 87 tribes to specifically address domestic violence, dating violence, sexual assault, stalking, and sex trafficking. Also in fiscal year 2016, the Department of Health and Human Services provided $14.5 million to support domestic violence services through 238 tribes and tribal organizations. Beyond providing funding, we also support training and resource sharing initiatives to build capacity for tribes to address violence against women through their own criminal justice and healthcare systems. As Larry mentioned, a historic provision was added to the Violence Against Women Act in 2013. And so federal law now recognizes tribes' inherent power to arrest, prosecute, and sentence non-Indian perpetrators who commit acts of domestic violence, dating violence, or violate certain protection orders in Indian Country. Since this law passed, the department has worked to assist tribes in exercising their new authority effectively. There are now 45 tribes participating in a technical assistance working group to receive training and exchange information on a peer-to-peer level on implementing this new provision. This past year, the Office on Violence Against Women received its first appropriation to implement this new program, and 7 tribes have received awards. In 2010, the Department of Justice launched the National Indian Country Training Initiative to ensure that federal prosecutors and state and tribal criminal justice personnel receive the support that they need to meet the particular challenges relevant to Indian Country prosecutions. To help with the investigation of missing and murdered Indigenous women, we offer training on the National Missing and Unidentified Person System, which is a centralized repository and resource center for missing persons and unidentified human remains. This online system is free and can be searched by law enforcement and the general public in the hope of resolving these cases. A new resource that will launch in January of 2017 is our country's first ever crisis line for American Indian and Alaska Native victims called the Strong Hearts Helpline. This new helpline will provide culturally and linguistically appropriate services and will assist survivors of domestic and sexual violence with safety planning, emotional support, and referrals to local resources. The administration also has supported a number of initiatives focused on sexual assault in Indian Country. A sexual assault nurse examiner initiative to address the acute needs of tribal victims of sexual violence, a national online clearinghouse, a toll-free helpline for practitioners, and training for lay healthcare providers on collecting and preserving forensic evidence in sexual assault cases. The Department of Justice also funds a number of research initiatives that we'll discuss later in the data and research breakout session. One report released this year by the National Institute of Justice that Carrie had mentioned earlier examines the prevalence of violence against American Indian and Alaska Native women and men. The results show high rates of violence for both men and women and provides the most thorough assessment on the extent of violence against this population to date. The United States Department of Justice is truly committed to decreasing the numbers of American Indian and Alaska Native women who have become victims to violence. We're committed to strengthening the capacity of tribal governments to respond to violent crimes, and we're committed to ensuring that perpetrators are held accountable. On behalf of the Office on Violence Against Women and the rest of the Department of Justice, we look forward to exchanging knowledge, sharing best practices, and working to improve cross-border coordination between our three countries in order to provide safety and justice to Indigenous women and girls across North America. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry and Bea, and thank you to all of our speakers for setting the stage for what we hope will be a number of productive breakout sessions this afternoon. Each of you has given us a lot of information to process over the next few hours, and we look forward to all coming back here is the big group this afternoon to hear all of the solutions to everything that you have come up with at the breakout session. So just a couple of housekeeping and logistical notes before we let you break up. We'll have 2 different rooms going for the breakout session. One will be here, so if you're participating in the criminal justice breakout session, you can remain in this room. If you're participating in the health and social services breakout session, it will be in room 274. You don't need to remember that number because there will be people outside to help you get to the room, but there should be coffee and replenished goods outside. So just take a couple minutes and then we'll get started, I'm told, in about 10 minutes on breakouts. And Carrie, you might have something to add.
Sorry, folks, before we break, just one more thing since we have our live stream. If everybody could just give me 1 minute. I want to make sure that everybody has 2 fact sheets that were on the display tables at front, one of which is on United States government new commitments and accomplishments that is focused at our domestic level, the other of which is a fact sheet expressing our trilateral commitments that we are announcing today. Those will be further developed by our principals later this afternoon, and it'll be officially released online later this afternoon. But I just want to make sure that for those who are watching online and those in the room, that you're aware that these 2 fact sheets exist. So thank you very much.